Thank you, Karen. So my topic is, my topic is the impact of state immunization registry on immunization rates of sixth grade students. I'm currently the vaccine preventable disease epidemiologist for the Indiana State Department of Health. But prior to that, I was the assessment epidemiologist for the immunization program. So first I'll give a little overview on our registry. I think it's important to understand how our registry works to understand the implications of this data. Our registry is called CHIRP. We like funny acronyms. It stands for Children and Hoosiers Immunization Registry Program. The first registry in Indiana was established in 2002. We currently have one or more vaccine doses recorded for almost 5 million Hoosiers. So the information in the registry is date of administration, lot number, manufacturer, contraindications, disease history, site of administration. And immunizations can only be added by licensed medical personnel. So that comes into play with the school immunizations. School secretaries cannot enter immunization information. They can view the registry, and we encourage them to do so, but they cannot actually themselves enter any records. So then I'll talk a little bit about how we handle school immunization reporting in Indiana. So first, this study looked at the 2009-2010 school year and looked at sixth grade students only. And in 2009-2010, the same entrance requirements were required kindergarten through 12th grade. It was 5, 4, 2, 3, 1. Starting this current school year, we do require second dose varicella for kindergarten and 6 through 12, and 6 to 12 also are required to have a Tdap and meningococcal vaccine. So Indiana allows two types of exemptions for school immunization requirements, medical and religious. Medical must be signed by a physician. Religious exemptions must be signed by a parent. However, they could be on a napkin. They could literally be on a scrap of paper. I do not want Susie Smith vaccinated because it's against my religion. Signed, Susie Smith's mom, handed into the school. Now she's exempt. So we do not offer a philosophical objection, but smart parents would figure out that religious could be a quasi-philosophical objection. We don't require them to prove that they actually attend a church or they actually have a religion. So both must be submitted to the school each year. So even if it's a lifelong medical contraindication or exemption, they are supposed to have it signed by the physician every year and turned in. However, the state health department never sees those exemptions. They're held at the school. So we have no way of verifying that they're actually current or that they actually exist. So the immunization reports, state law requires only accredited schools to report immunization data on kindergarten, first, and sixth grade students to the state health department. So all public schools are accredited, and some private schools are accredited. In Indiana, all Catholic schools are accredited. I'm not sure why. And some, then we get a sort of a mishmash of other religions and non-religious schools. I don't think we have a good idea of how many non-accredited private schools we have, but we only care for this for our analysis on accredited schools. So the information from kindergarten and sixth grade is transmitted to CDC through the school immunization assessment survey, which is part of the reason we collect that data. Kindergarten isn't a required grade in Indiana, so we collect the first grade information so because that is a required grade. So we kind of use that for our sort of internal purposes. So for the past few years, schools have reported the information to ISDH on paper forms. But starting with this current school year, schools have to report using the registry. So in 2009-2010, schools had the option of reporting it either on paper forms or in the registry. It was up to them. The school nurses are not happy with this because they have to enter it, where with the paper form, a secretary could summarize the information. Well, now a licensed medical professional has to log in, and with private schools especially, most of them don't have school nurses. I know the Catholic schools do not. So what we told them is if you can find someone in your parish or a mom who'd be willing to volunteer her time, so we are getting a lot of very unhappy school personnel with this rule. But they knew about it for like 3 years. So in 2009 and 2010, they did have the option. And the reason that the study was conducted was that I think we intuitively knew that when we went to registry reporting only, the vaccine the total number of up-to-date students would decrease. I don't think we had any idea how much it would decrease. And so I wanted to see if we could get kind of a handle on how much of a decrease we could expect to see once we went to all registry reporting. So this is a copy of the immunization summary form for sixth grade students that we no longer accept, but that were available last year. And when we did it on paper, the K-1 and 6 would take up between 2 and 3 filing cabinet doors full, which then all had to be entered into a spreadsheet. It was months of work, so I'm so grateful that we're using the registry now. But anyway, so this is what we would have to get. We would get 1 on K, 1 on first grade, 1 on 6th, and we also require an HPV form. And this is not a very good screenshot, but it sort of shows the screenshot of CHIRP, our registry. On the left-hand side shows all the vaccines, so pretty much any vaccine that could possibly be administered. We also collect information on lead blood draws as well, so if those are completed, that also can be entered in the registry. And then if you click on the date, a new screen will pop up, and it explains the administrator, the lot number, the manufacturer. If it's historical, if it comes in through one of our main health departments, does an electronic upload, and it just comes in as historical, so there's no lot number information, but there is a date and a facility. Which, now that I do vaccine preventable disease investigations, I hate them because I can't get lot numbers for my investigations. So as I mentioned before, students need to, the only people who can really do much with immunizations in the registry are licensed medical personnel, which in schools are the school nurses. So in order for a student to be part of, to be reported as part of a school in the registry, they have to be added to the school's roster, or they have to be associated with the school. And a child can only be on one school's roster at a given time. So if a student moves to a new school, in theory, the nurse at the old school does not have to remove that child because the nurse at the new school will add them to the roster. And then students are automatically rolled to the next grade level, so the nurses don't have to go in and manually update the grades. So if the child is already in the registry because their physician has put them in there, or we also get automatic uploads from the birth certificate, so sometimes a child will be in there, but there won't be any records associated with them. So if there's no record at all, the nurse has to add the child. If there is a record but no immunizations, then the nurse has to add all the immunizations. So in the registry will also record religious and medical exemptions and chickenpox history. And the one of the large pediatrician practices near Indianapolis, which has about 15,000 kids, is one of the biggest practices, I think, in the state. They don't use the registry, and most of those kids go to one large school corporation. So I'm sure the school nurse was cursing us the entire time because all of these kids have blank records. And so all of these lot numbers, everything has, all the dates of administration all have to be entered manually by the school nurse only. So we surprisingly have not gotten death threats, at least that I am aware of right now. So they were less than pleased. So we suspected that there would be differences between the paper forms and CHIRP, mostly because CHIRP automatically checks for appropriate intervals between doses and the minimum and maximum age for each vaccine. So like with the hepatitis B series, you know, the children could have the appropriate interval between 1 and 2, 2 and 3, 1 and 3, but if that third dose is given too early, our registry will kick it out and say it's invalid, where if a school nurse, which I suspect they do, they count doses, 1, 2, 3, check, she's done. Because it's so difficult with the complexity of the schedule, and if you have a large school and you have one nurse who also actually, you know, has to be a nurse, you're just going to count doses. And so our suspicion was that the rate would decrease and we would see the biggest difference in the more, in the series that required the most number of doses, so like the DTAPs, because those require 5 doses. And then FERPA, the dreaded four-letter word. So immunization records on any child can be entered into the registry, no permission required. So all of the doctor's offices, they don't need to have any kind of requirement. However, we have interpreted FERPA as requiring parental permission to submit from the registry to ISDH. So if Susie Smith is in the registry and she's complete, the school nurse can't say, Susie Smith belongs to my school, until she gets a signed waiver from Susie Smith's mom, which I think will have a dramatic impact on the number of records that are submitted to us every year. And, of course, paper forms do not require parental consent. I don't think most parents even knew it happened. So this is looking more at now at the schools in Indiana and in the schools that were studied. So the purposes of the study, immunization reports on sixth grade only were analyzed. It was assumed that it could be extrapolated, and in this school year, in the 2009-2010 school year, the immunization requirements were the same through all grades. So now these kids had the best chance of being up to date. If they were behind on their MMR and they got it when they were in third grade, they had all this time to sort of get caught up. And so this is sort of the best case scenario. So this was analyzed using SPSS, and a p-value of greater than 0.05 is statistically significant. So in 2009-2010, there were 712 accredited public schools and 246 accredited private schools. And we received sixth grade immunization reports on approximately 93% of public schools and 71% of private schools. Now, some reported via paper form, some reported through CHIRP, and some reported both ways, which confounded me at first, and I couldn't figure out why they would go through so much effort. I mean, the paper form is not easy, and the CHIRP certainly isn't if your kids aren't already in there. And so we were sort of puzzled why would they would go through all this effort. And then it occurred to me that CHIRP has no save or submit button. And so basically you say, Susie Smith belongs to my school, and then we pull that data later. They thought that once they got everyone loaded in, they had to push a button so that it would, like, the report would get sent to us. Well, there is no sending it to us. We pull it. And so I think the nurses were worried that we weren't going to get this data and that they were going to get in trouble. So to not get in trouble, they then reported it also on paper. Which I appreciated that they were that worried. We have no authority to get them in trouble, but they thought that we did, apparently. So we had 218 schools that had sixth grade students and mailed a paper form and had at least one child associated with the school in CHIRP, so they were on their roster. And then we had 122 schools that had sixth grade students and mailed a paper form and had at least 50% of their sixth grade students on the roster in CHIRP. And the analysis going forward looks at these 122 schools. The thought was, if you have a sixth grade of 400 students and you have three students associated with your school in the registry, those three students are probably not very representative of your entire sixth grade. So that's why we picked the 122. So the 122 is 10 private accredited schools and 112 public schools. And again, it was a large enough sample size to analyze, and it was more representative. So this is looking at the percentage of students up to date on all required vaccines for school admission by reporting mechanism. This is looking at all 122 schools. So the number of students reported is relatively close. We're only about 10% off in the registry. But the percent up to date is about 16% less, which to me was a pretty dramatic finding. It's pretty substantial considering how close the number of students is in CHIRP and paper that we analyzed. So now this is the percentage of sixth grade students needing doses of vaccine by reporting mechanism. So it's looking at CHIRP and the paper form. And on paper, it says that at worst, the varicella would be less than 1%. The records show that almost all the kids were completely up to date. But the registry says almost 13% of kids needed a DTaP or a tetanus dose. The polio, hepatitis, MMR, and varicella were all relatively close to each other. And then this is the percentage of sixth grade students reporting an exemption, which can be recorded in the registry. And in for religious exemptions, it's pretty close. On paper, it's quite a bit more medical exemptions than in CHIRP. So I did a pair t-test looking at all 122 schools, looking to see if there was a statistically significant difference between the exemptions and the doses of vaccine. And all of the doses of vaccine were strongly statistically significant. The religious one was not, and medical exemptions were close to being statistically significant. So now looking just at the 112 public schools that were part of this study, it's about 16% fewer kids were up to date using the registry than on the paper forms. And then this is looking again at the single antigens. Again, varicella, according to the paper, varicella was the lone offender, but on CHIRP, it's the DTaP and tetanus shots. And then these are exemptions again. In public schools, there were a lot fewer medical exemptions, but the religious exemptions were almost identical. So again, this is just looking at the statistical significance. All the vaccines, of course, were strongly statistically significant, and the medical and religious exemptions were not. So this is looking at the 10 private schools. It's even worse for the 10 private schools. We're off by almost 20%. But the sample size was very low. We had fewer than 300 students in either category. And actually, they tended to have better completeness rates for the DTAP, but they had worse compliance rates for polio, which I thought was unusual. But at least it looks like those school nurses are a little more honest, because the varicella and the DTAP were actually almost in sort of the right ballpark. And then this is looking at exemptions. There were no medical exemptions for these schools, either on paper or in the registry, and there are about twice as many religious exemptions. And then again, looking at the pair t-test, none of them were statistically significant, but that's not too much of a surprise considering there were only 10 schools. So the limitations of the study is that there is no way to verify the immunization information on the paper forms. The nurses, I assume, get the information from the records that are turned into the school, but we have no ability to verify that. We used to go back and verify and do audits of schools, but we were told we couldn't because of FERPA, and we also have no way of verifying the exemption information. The form could have been filled out 7 years ago and put on file, and we have no way of knowing that. I would have loved to have had access to the original paper records at the school for these schools to do a comparison, but we cannot. Also, only about a little under 13% of accredited schools were analyzed, which is tends to skew the results a bit. Indiana has 92 counties, and schools from 63 counties were examined, which I think is pretty good considering it was such a small sample. And again, the exemptions are not filed with the state health department. They're on file with the school. And the private schools, of course, with only having 10 schools, that really limited the ability to make any kind of comparison. So in summary, the reported immunization rate for Indiana sixth graders appear to be dramatically affected by reporting mechanism, with an approximately 16% decline when using the registry. All vaccines are affected. It was statistically significant for all schools and in public schools, but not significant for private schools. But I think that was due more to sample size. I suspect when we look at it this year, with a bigger sample size, I suspect it would be significant. But exemptions appear not to be affected by mode of reporting.
We'll open it up for questions, and then at the end I've got the obligatory housekeeping announcements.
Hi, Alan Hinman. A question for Dr. Copeland. The difference between NIS and IIS coverage rates has been observed for some time, and your statement was that, in essence, the registries are incomplete. In past, some people have said that NIS accepts any dose administered. Would the definitions used be the same? That is, these are only what the registry would consider valid doses?
We did attempt to make the data as comparable as possible. I can't speak to specifics on individual vaccines, but as far as I'm aware, we were trying to compare the same doses.
Well, this really has to do with the interval between doses and the dates of administration. Angela talked about this as an issue potentially in Indiana, where nurses may have been counting doses, whereas CHIRP only counts doses that are considered valid.
Right. In the NIS, we're not counting. You know, we do look at the intervals.
Do you?
No.
Unless it's changed, it has been in past,
That
it's numbers of doses, not...
I think it's the number of doses, but sometimes when we are cleaning up the data, we do look at it from dates also.
Right.
We have some of the records...
I guess my point is you're still not necessarily
comparing,
describing the same thing.
Yes.
And I think it is potentially equally as likely that NIS is overestimating as that IIS is incomplete, with the probable exception of movers.
I have a question for each presenter. For the NIS match, can you just tell me the birth cohort of the date? Do you know the date range? Or?
This was the 2008, so 19 months back would have been born roughly three years.
Not that hard.
So around, it would have been around January of 2005 through, I believe, July of 2007.
Okay.
Would have been those that would have been eligible during that time period.
Great.
We can get you those date ranges, though.
Okay.
Specifically.
No problem. And for Angela, when the nurses were entering the information on the registry, were they added to the immunization record?
Yes, they are. The way that the registry works is that any licensed medical personnel can enter them, but we have a little symbol next to the date. It's a little plus sign, which indicates that it was entered by a school nurse.
Okay.
And so if we click on that and the little screen comes up that would normally have the date of administration and would have a lot of the information, it would just say date of administration and the type, and it would be the person who entered it would be Department of Education. So we would know it was a school nurse entered immunization, but it is now part of the, because it has to come from a medical record or somehow submitted to the school, I would assume, on, you know, it's signed by a physician. So now it's officially part of their record with the registry.
And can the nurses delete immunizations?
That's a good question.
But the health department does. So, like when we had our school requirements this past year, sometimes the parent gets so excited they take it in and give it to the school and say, "My kid got this." And the health department's a couple days behind, because you know they've been doing thousands of vaccinations. The health department could just go in and update it, send them the notes, and that'll override. But the school nurses, we actually had to work with our vendors specifically in school nurse modules to make sure they don't have the ability to delete. They could delete. Potentially, if they entered it themselves, if they
made an error,
they can't go in and, "Oh, well, Dr. Bob put this
on
wrong,
I'm
going to get rid of it," and put it
in
the right
spot.
They can't do that.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
I'm Bridget Ahrens from Vermont. I just have a comment. And for people in the room who might not be registry people, the value of looking at these two different sources of data, the NIS and the IIS, is really not to say this is what we should be using to look at vaccine coverage. The whole purpose of this is, as IISs are getting more and more populated, how well are they doing? The NIS is an easy benchmark. The best thing to do would be to go out and look at individual children's records at practices, compare it to the registry, but that's very time intensive. And so the whole purpose of doing this comparison, just to kind of to give you that, is to show our progress. And I do think that the best picture of children's immunization histories will be the registries as we get live with HL7 and do all the other projects that we have to get our registries full. Thank you.
Stephanie Bilek, CDC. I had a question for Angela about what the next steps were going to be in Indiana, given these huge discrepancies you found, and if you could talk a little bit about why the policy was in place that only school nurses could enter and if that was going to be changed.
Right. Well, the law was passed, I believe, in 2007 to make, in that time frame, that eventually we would go to this requirement to be putting it in the registry. And I know that there had been many questions about who can enter records, and does it have to be a licensed medical personnel? And so the problem is that that's the way it's written in our law, actually, for the registry, because we went to our lawyers and said, is there any way that we can get around this? Because it wasn't even so much for schools. So it was more for private practices were having issues, because a lot of, you know, the people who have the most time on their hands, not that they have time on their hands, might be like a receptionist. And so we went to our lawyers, and our lawyers said, nice try. That's the way the law is written. As far as next steps go, at this point, I am unaware of any potential changes to the law. I mean, I from a record-keeping standpoint and from an assessment standpoint, I love the registry, and I would not want to go back to paper records ever. That was months of just typing into a spreadsheet. It was horrible. But I what I would love to see would be us to be able to verify, do selected targeting and go to certain schools and verify records. But we have been told explicitly we are not allowed to do that. And the main reason, the one of the biggest complications of this is that the school reports are really our only way of providing county-specific immunization coverage, because certainly NIS doesn't go that low. The registry itself can be kind of, depending on the physicians that use it, it's usually not the best benchmark. So we have been using the school immunization reports as sort of our county proxy for the immunization rates, which now are going to look drastically, drastically different. At this point, I don't think we really have a next step, because as far as I'm aware, we're intending to continue on with the registry, which I think is fantastic. And things, we're not going to be able to provide additional resources to hire additional school nurses, so we're not able to sort of fix on that end what I think would really help, would be to provide them with extra resources. And I don't think we'll be able to do that. So unfortunately, I think our next step is we don't have one. Which is sort of sad, because we know this discrepancy exists, and yet we are kind of powerless to do anything about it. So, don't mean to end on a downer, but...
Can I ask one more question? I had a question for Ken. If you could talk, without outing the actual locality, but it seemed like the IIS in Locality 8 was fairly different than a lot of the IISs, so their data appeared to be more complete, and I was wondering if you could just describe what some of the differences in that IIS were.
Honestly, no. I don't have the translation with me, so I can't speak to that right now.
Just questions everywhere.
I beat you. I'm Gary Urquhart from CDC. Angie, I still don't understand how you got around FERPA. I thought you had to have parental permission in order for the schools to submit data. You did?
That's an interesting question. My suspicion, and I have no proof of this, just my personal opinion, this is not the opinion of ISDH or any of the other affiliates, I suspect that these school nurses that submitted twice did not get FERPA releases. That is my gut reaction. Because maybe they were very forward-thinking and they had sort of knew about FERPA and they were very aware of it and they thought, hey, I'm going to be proactive and I'm going to have a FERPA release even though it's not required. Do I think that happened in 122 schools? No. I think they submitted it anyway. But to me, once they submit that and it's already been done, I thought, well, I'm just going to take advantage of that and go ahead and analyze it. My gut is that they did not have FERPA releases on those. And we have no way of verifying, even with the schools that submit this current school year, that they have actually completed FERPA releases on everyone that they submit. So even with this current school year where it is required, we have no check or balance in place to say, please send us all of your FERPA releases so we can match up. We take them at their word that they are in compliance with FERPA.
And your OGC is okay with that?
They must be, because they, I mean, I'm going to say yes. Yeah, April has a comment.
I'll just chime in on that. Basically, how Indiana's home rule, so every county is up to their own. Because FERPA is a school law, that's DOE. It does not affect us in any way, because really what FERPA does is they need permission to take it from the school record and give it to us. If they do that without permission, that's their own fault.
You may be in some liability.
Yeah.
But that is still DOE. You have to address that, because.
But it's being a good partner.
Yeah, Indiana,
you want to be a good partner, and if you're just going to take the data and say the responsibility is all yours, you're not being a good partner.
Well, and that's why we educate, because they are aware of it. But what we've heard is that some school lawyers say that FERPA doesn't apply. Okay, that's their school lawyer. What some schools do, and even parents don't realize it, is even to release their report card data, they get a FERPA consent. They get a FERPA consent for every single thing at the beginning of the year. My kid's picture can be put in stuff, I can release their report card. And so somewhere in that packet, mom and dad signs, they agree, there's a FERPA release, and so that applies to everything. And that's what a lot of schools do, is they want to publish the honor roll.
Yeah, in Indiana, it's very unique because we are a home rule state. So the counties are sort of on their own, and Department of Education and ISDH are two completely separate entities, and we each have our own set of lawyers, who then have different opinions, and we have always, because it is a Department of Education rule that happens to affect us, we let Department of Education take the lead on it. Whether that is right or wrong, that's kind of how we have viewed it.
Right, and our legal, because they don't deal with FERPA, FERPA is not a health law. Yeah. Our inside legal counsel really can't address it.
Right, and so it goes to DOE, and then the problem is that the DOE doesn't collect the immunization information, ISDH does. And so Department of Education says, well, we don't see the benefit of it. I mean, I think that the way that we're set up is it's very piecemeal, but there has been some discussion at the state level of making sure that this is, the lawyers have to, you know, this is what we're going to do as far as it goes on our end. What happens in the individual school level or individual county level is kind of out of our hands.
And I just emailed our programmer because I think in our new upgrade there's actually going to be a checkbox and school nurse will as well check if they did get the FERPA consent form, just so there is some documentation. Some of the school softwares are in document. So the schools are keeping track of who they have the form for or not. So they're only reporting out on the things they got FERPA consent for.
Quickly, we're going to go to one last question and then...
Oh, good. And, Gary, thank you. That was one of my questions. So I have one other question, though, for Dr. Copeland. And so it's a comment and a suggestion, maybe more than anything else. Health plans have for quite a while been using registry data to create their HEDIS reports, which is their coverage measure for completeness among their enrollees. And some health plans in Washington, and I know in other states, come to the registry first. They send us a list of their enrollees, very much like you send a list of the people you're surveying, and we send them back the data file that has the immunization records, and then they use that data to determine who they need to follow up with at the provider level. So it saves them the work of having to go into individual provider offices, and a similar approach could help you to avoid having to call all those providers. If you've got kids that are complete in the registry and you trust the registry data, that takes care of at least, you know, a body of kids and
you're
providers.
Right. That is another that's been considered as far as integrating is, can you reduce the providers that you would need to send forms out to and instead say these are participating providers, and therefore we can utilize the registry information instead.
And I would say if the child is meeting all of the criteria for the up-to-dateness, then don't go to the provider. But if it's the registry doesn't show the child is complete and up-to-date, you still don't know if the data is missing or if their shots are missing.